Although they couldn't see the roof, they could feel it above them, almost seeming to lower with every step, as though this in itself were part of a trap, descending to crush them. They could feel its oppressive weight above them, poised to seal them in this stone tomb. Ryan was trying to keep calm. He'd faced much worse than this before, but the other three weren't as experienced, and he could feel the tension coming off them, hitting him in the back with an almost physical force. Ryan carefully put one foot in front of the other, testing the ground ahead before trusting it with his full weight. He had ordered the others to do the same. The long stone slabs that constituted the passage walls were joined in sections, and in these divides there was the possibility of a hidden weapon. Ryan figured these fissures were where the plates comprising the wall structures could be moved to change the layout of the labyrinth. The flashlight hadn't picked up the wire. It had to have been covered with grease or mold, deliberately disguised by those crawlers who operated the labyrinth. The first Ryan knew about it was when he felt it pluck at his hairline. He thought it was a spider of some kind, on a thread, and he swatted at it. When he felt the tension of the wire against his hand, he knew he had made a wrong move. A very wrong move.
Watch out!
He directed the flashbeam and could see that one wall section was moving on a pivot, turning to cut off the passage to their rear.
Back! Before it shuts!
Ryan whirled and started to run toward the closing slabs. The Sekhmen were confused, half-turned, and frozen with indecision. Ryan ran for the slab, reaching out to try to halt its progress. He grabbed at the stone, slippery with mold, failing to find a grip. He dug his heels in.
Fuck this!
No matter how hard he pulled, he couldn't stop the slab. By this time, the Sek team had realized what was happening and was attempting to aid him. Yet it was impossible for all of them to gain a hold, as the gap between the stationary and moving slabs grew more and more narrow.
For fuck's sake, get through!
There was enough space for one of them at least to get on the other side of the slab. Yet they were so thrown by what had happened that none of the three caught on to his meaning, and so the opportunity was lost. The gap was now too narrow to squeeze through, and Ryan let it drop.
Fuck!
Ryan directed the flashbeam back in the direction they had just come from. As he had feared, there was more movement up ahead. Another slab moved across to block the passage less than 150 yards ahead. But rather than boxing them in, this one moved from the left wall, blocked the way ahead, while revealing a new opening in the newly formed space to their left.
What the hell is that?
There was a rank, musky smell that came from the new opening. Animal feces, old blood, and rotten meat, mixed with the warm smell of a live predator. Trouble. Ryan edged closer to the gap, drawing his Sig Sauer. He could almost swear that some of the shadow was a swirling darkness deeper than the rest. He watched the moving shadows keenly, gesturing with his free hand for the Sek team to keep back, the flashbeam sweeping across the roof of the passage in time with his movements. Within the darkness, the differing shades of black moved, swirled, and coalesced into shapes. Into one shape. A shape that moved toward him at speed, snarling as it sprang up from the floor of the labyrinth. Ryan tensed, following its line of flight with the arc of his arm. It was a cat of some kind. Not the feral, scrawny creatures that hung around the edges of vills, scavenging in packs. This had more in common with the kind of larger wildcats that he had seen in the areas around the Rockies. It was larger than a big dog, and far more muscled. It sprang and reached out to him, with lethally sharp claws extended. Its amber eyes were jaundiced and staring wide, the teeth yellowing, and the breath so hot and fetid that he could smell it even at this distance.
Eat this!
The big cat was deflected in its flight by the power of the three rounds as they ripped into its underbelly, scoring through the soft flesh and spilling intestines in mid-flight. The exit wound spun the beast, bone shards deflecting the flight so that the spent rounds came out through the spine and the ribcage.
I think you chilled it, Ryan.
I'm grateful for that. I thought...
Ryan felt the air move and saw a flicker of movement.
Not again.
The flashlight caught the female cat in flight, ears flattened against her head. There was no time to fire, so he dropped to his right, slamming his shoulder against the floor. The Sig Sauer dropped from a momentarily numb grasp as he tried to roll away from the immediate danger. The cat hit the wall where Ryan had been standing scant moments before. His only hope was that she had stunned herself too much to recover before he had a chance to gain his feet. His arm still numbed from the impact, he hauled himself awkwardly upright. The flashlight was now rolling on the floor some 2 or 3 yards from him, the light directed toward him and the cat, casting dramatic shadows against the wall behind them. To survive, he'd have to drag his panga from its thigh sheath. but it was on the wrong side for him to grasp easily with his damaged arm. And now the cat was up, shaking herself, and circling to locate him.
You guys can help, you know.
Oh, yeah, right.
Two heavy Lugers and a Browning suddenly snapped into action.
Enough! Fireflies, save some ammo. It's chilled. Better late than never, I guess.
The air was filled with cordite, blotting out and overpowering the stench of death and the charnel house atmosphere that had previously prevailed. Ryan bent and retrieved the flashlight, which was casting a crimson glow from the gore splattered across the glass. He wiped it off and walked to the far wall, by the big cat's now deserted pen. If he could open this somehow, they could progress in the right direction. He ignored the smell from the pen and the pools of blood gathering around his feet.
Well, don't just stand there. Come and help me find some way of opening this. Otherwise, we're going to be stuck here until the Nightcrawlers come for us. And there's no telling how long that would take.
Jack held up a hand to halt his party.
Someone's found the local wildlife.
Ryan, sound like Sig.
Hope they get past the obstruction in one piece.
Get chilled now. Maybe should look for Owen instead of listening to them.
You lead the way. You've got a better eye for these paths than I.
Jack was leading them past the beasts, and his sense of imminent danger meant that they had so far avoided three traps. One was set in the wall and was triggered by a raised step in the floor. It was only slightly raised, just enough for the impact of a foot to trigger an air release that shot razor-sharp darts across the width of the passage, from ankle level to the roof. Jack saw it as a raised bump and triggered it with a pebble that he tossed with practiced ease after staying them with a gesture. The raised step was on a hair trigger to allow for even the slightest chance contact from whoever may pass, and the darts shot across from concealed holes with a hiss of air pressure, striking the far wall before clattering to the floor. The second had been a pit trap like the one that had almost claimed JB's life. Jack couldn't have told the others how he knew it was there. Only that there was something inside him that screamed for him to stop. Flattening to his belly, he had crawled ahead, testing the ground in front of him with an outstretched arm, until he had reached a point where the ground had been softer, more malleable beneath his fingertips. Further probing had left the layer of topsoil, suspended on a flimsy film of material, giving way beneath his probing, triggering a reaction that led to the whole surface of the passage floor falling in for 6 feet in front of him. Mark, Lemire, and Cyan had peered into the abyss, the flashlight lighting the sharpened stakes pointing up to them, the remains of less fortunate travelers scattered on the pit floor.
Twice we would have perished were it not for you.
The albino youth said nothing to Lemire, but Mark pondered on how fortunate they had been when Ryan had assigned Jack to them. Twice the albino had made him understand why. It was important that the Memphis leader and his wife be kept as safe as possible. The sec chief doubted that any of the other strangers would be able to ensure this as well as Jack Lauren. And the third time bore this out. The flashlight beam showed that they were about to reach a T-junction in the labyrinth when Jack pulled them up short.
What? There's no room for anything this close to the end of the passage, surely?
Uh-huh. Good job, you not in lead.
Barely visible on the stone-pitted dead earth was a wire, covered with dirt, but just raised enough to catch his trained and better-adjusted eye. He edged toward the wire and extended the toe of his boot. It was something he didn't particularly wish to do, but there was little other option. He had to trigger the trap somehow, and it was pointless to wish for something long with which to prod at the wire when there was nothing to hand. As he felt the tension on the wire give at his gentle pressure, he tried to work out what kind of trap it could be. As Lemire had said, they were close to the end of a passage, and he had noticed that all the other traps came near the center of slabs, rather than the end. It made sense. The closer to an end, the greater the chance of the slab splitting when the trap was put in place. So what would this be, and how would it work? It seemed to take an eternity for the wire to give, but when it did, the result was instantaneous. A blade swung from the ceiling, swooping down in an arc that would have cut through the skull of anyone who was in its path. It was scimitar-shaped and just as sharp. As it hit the wall slab, bouncing back, it left a deep mark in the stone.
Above, below, and from each side. Is there nowhere that can be counted as safe?
Don't think anything safe. Stay alive longer.
Jack examined the blade. He looked up at the ceiling. It had been concealed in a groove covered with earth to look like mold. The wire had been secured in the earth and run around the end of the slab at the junction, so that it would not show on the wall. Jack felt the blade, admiring its honed edge, and wondered if he could somehow detach it. If he could, there was no doubt that it would be useful.
They're coming!
Cyan bolted around the corner.
Come back!
Lemire started to give his wife chase. He was stayed by the hand of Mark.
No! If we go, we go together.
Jack joined them and followed her with a flashlight. What the hell was she doing? She had been incredibly calm and collected so far. This didn't make sense.
How much longer can I continue to walk this fine line, this silken thread that is like that which connects my id and ego to the real world, or at least that which I call real? Truth is a subjective thing, so much more than it is objective. It depends upon perspective, mood, attitude, and intellect. What do you see, and how do you see it? Of course, it would be a matter of moments to plow through these childishly simple locks, now that I have divined the code through which the combinations are obtained. It is all a matter of going through life, through truth, through the means by which I can justify to myself my own actions. For I am a foul and wretched creature, torn between serving my own needs and sacrificing those for the good of those that I call my friends. For even if I have doubts about my own friendship, then there is little doubt that this is what they are to me. How many times have they drawn me from the fire when it seemed that I would be consumed by the flames? She waits at my shoulder as I appear to labor over a task that I make arduous, yet could be over in an instant. I am compromising at this juncture. We could easily make our escape, seek out our friends, join in the fight. Yet the more I delay, the more likely that Odyssey will return and show me the secrets that, despite the need within me to fight, I still feel will show me the means of ultimate salvation. I do not say no to either option. Instead, I take the cowardly way out and wait for chance and fate to force my hand. If I make a show of one thing while waiting for another, then the gods of fate will smile upon me and make for me a decision that will be right, whether I know it or not. Ah, this accursed block is too simple. She watches over my shoulder now, and yet she has not yet divined the cipher for herself. She is not fool enough to be unable to work it out. If she did, that would force my hand. But because she trusts me, she does not think twice.
Doc, why are you looking at me like that? Just keep working on the lock.
The old man shook his head and returned to his task. For a moment, Doc had been unaware that his meandering mind had caused him to leave the lock and stare at her. As he returned to finding the right combination of red, black, and white squares to trigger the lock, his mind raced once more. They had taken more than a quarter of an hour to get past three doors, and at this rate, they could be anything up to an hour getting out of the inner temple. By rights, his rate of progress should have increased, as he should have learned more about these locks from each one he cracked. There was no way he could keep up this pace without her becoming suspicious. The door suddenly yielded.
By the three Kennedys! I may be getting the hang of this after all.
Carry on like this, and we'll be out of here in no time.
They hurried through the open door and along a corridor lit by flickering torches before coming to a split.
Which way, dearest Christie?
Left has a slight incline. I'm guessing we weren't at ground level when we started, so we need to go down.
Whatever makes you say that?